But I think to start, I'm going to read Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Well, my story began, my husband Tim, who's the area director for Johnny and Friends New England, we got married back in 1983, and we were so excited to want to have children, but we decided it would probably be good to have some time as husband and wife. So 2 years into our marriage, we were blessed by the gift of Pete, and 2 years later, our son Joe. Life was good. We had all these dreams and things we wanted to do and places we wanted to go, and we were thinking, wow, this is an amazing journey we're on. And then back in 1989, our son Pete was having some delays, and he was having trouble getting up from the floor. He would just have to push off on his legs to stand up, and we thought that was a little odd, but I didn't like to compare my son's development to other people. But what I learned was that, each boy develops differently, and some boys are delayed. So we were at the doctor's office for our younger son, Joe, for an appointment. And the doctor, we just described a little bit about the preschool teacher, what she saw with Pete, and some of his gross and fine motor skills were delayed. And the doctor watched Pete get up from the floor, and I think the doctor knew exactly what was wrong with Pete, but instead of telling us, he said, we need to do a blood test to see if there's anything wrong with his muscles. So back then, we did the blood work, and 3 days later, the doctor called and said he needed to see my husband and I together. And we knew at that point that that probably meant that there was something not right. And so we went to the doctor's office, a lot of questioning, a lot of answers, a lot of discussion. And then the doctor just told us that our son Pete had Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is what Ben and Sam had that you saw this morning, and that it was a fatal disease and there was no cure for it. So at that point, they were concerned for our other son, Joe, because Joe was 18 months, and he was not crawling, not walking. He was very delayed also. And so within 3 days later, we learned that our other son inherited Duchenne muscular dystrophy too. So our life was shocked and changed, and our hearts literally broke, because it was something that you don't ever expect. And I think it was just something that taught us that, with God we could do this, but initially just the shock of that and just the cycle of grief you really have to go through. And, as you can, like Bob alluded to, you can be very angry at God, and then you have to rationalize sometimes with God, but then eventually you get to the point of acceptance. And it's not always an easy process or a fast process, but my husband and I were able to get to a point of acceptance pretty quickly. And we always used to think, how are we going to raise our sons? But as the doctor said, treat them normal. Bring them up like you would any other child and love them. And that just gave us just words of, it's going to have to be a little different way. But how are we going to do that? So we learned early on, our life would be different, but it still would be good. So like when you're given a diagnosis like this, or your child's born with a disability, or life just takes a turn, and you don't know what to expect, what do you do with that? So, we asked the why question a lot initially, but we knew we probably wouldn't get the answer to why on earth. Someday we'll get that when we get to heaven, but we knew that we probably weren't going to get that answer. So we had to just learn how to accept each day and be thankful for each day. So we didn't really blame ourselves. We just were sad for our sons, because what we thought would be was going to be different. And at first we thought, we can't share it with people because it's just something we need to deal with. But then we realized early on that you really need people to know so that they can pray with you and for you. And so then we started reaching out. And people, some people at first it was shocking, and some people actually left our life because they didn't really know what to say or do with it. So a lot of people found it easier just to avoid us, which at the time, that's when you really need a lot of support. But sometimes I think that's common. People just are afraid. And I think our sons weren't afraid to share with people, but I think sometimes people just didn't know what to say, so they pulled away. And that really was hard. But as my husband used to say, sometimes people are in your life for a season, and then they move on. And I think that was just a reality of what we had to face. But we had a choice. We could be bitter, or we could be better. And we chose better. We knew their lives. There were things we could do in different ways, but we could still dream differently. And Tim and I had a really good faith foundation, which helped us to deal with all the questions, concerns, just discussions we had to have as the boys got older. And we knew that over the years, our sons were going to lose their ability to walk and basically any ability to care for themselves. They would need help with everything from eating to getting in and out of bed to brushing their teeth, just everything they would need. And, you know, at that point, you know, it was like, we need a new house, we need an accessible van, you know, it's going to probably change where we live, where we probably worship at church, because a lot of churches at the time didn't have always the accessible needs that you needed. So we were trying to process a lot of things, like how are we going to get through that? But we knew we could only take one step at a time and one subject at a time, because if you got too far down the road, at times you did, but you had to reel yourself back, because sometimes even tomorrow was too hard to think about. You just had to be in the moment. And so I think our younger son, Joe, taught us that so much, because he didn't worry about tomorrow. He loved every day and for the gift it was, and he exhibited that every day of his life. So that encouraged us. But, you know, we had to go to a new school community, which was a lot of educating, but we found that the more we educated the team what our sons needed, the better it was going to be for everybody, because they didn't have all the answers, but, you know, we just wanted to educate them. And a lot of that, they did have two other brothers with the same condition in the school system. So at that point, they had a little more experience than the community we came from. So that just helped, just to try to. But we always did the team approach. It's like, not us against them. Let's be the united and try to accommodate our son's needs as best, and everyone would win in that case. And going to church, that was a challenge, because we moved from one town to another. So we thought, we really need to worship in the town that we're living in. So we went to the church, and during the peace, people ignored our sons. They didn't shake their hands, and they couldn't accommodate them for the children's program because it was an older building, and they weren't willing to move a classroom into an open area off the sanctuary to incorporate our children, so we had to figure out a plan. So we went to one church, and it was great, but the worship was on one level. The boys had to go outside, around the building, down a ramp to get into the worship part. I mean, for the children's part. For any social event, we had to carry them up a flight of stairs. So we learned that that probably in the long term was going to be too hard to stay there, because we could only carry them so far with manual wheelchairs, but we knew power wheelchairs were coming, and that wasn't going to be something that that church could accommodate. And so our friends invited us to a church, and the first Sunday we went there, there was a man teacher, and he said that our two sons were so close in age, they were 2 years apart, that they could go in the same classroom, and he assigned a buddy for them so that my husband and I could go to church and didn't have to be in the classroom, our sons, which was such a gift, because we didn't really have that opportunity much anywhere else. We either had to be in the classroom with them, or they just stayed in church with us. So I think it was just a wonderful experience, and we're still there to this day. And then another thing that was hard, we needed caregivers. And my son Pete used to say, why don't we need caregivers? Mom, you can take care of me. But as I explained to him, mom needs a break too. And so we were blessed with great caregivers. And at times it wasn't always easy, because turnover is very high. And sometimes there's just something about the caregiver that doesn't mesh for your family. So you have to hunt around and explore and try to find people. But eventually we had one caregiver with our son Pete for 10 years. She was like another mom to him, and she also had two sons, so she could just relate in a different level, and Pete could share things with her that maybe he didn't want to share with me, because maybe it was too hard for me to hear some of his concerns. But he was always safe to do that, and you know, she was there 2 hours in the morning to get him up. The afternoon he had someone there 12 to 5 a few afternoons, just so I could get out and do some errands and things. And so it was just really neat. And, you know, we learned to appreciate everything. We didn't take anything for granted. Every little thing that our sons could do, we were just so thankful. And eventually it became a point that they could use these two fingers to drive their wheelchair and have a head switch that they could use their head to turn the chair on or off. But that was the only use of their body they had as they got older. But for them, that's all they knew. And I think it's sort of unique in some ways. We only had our two sons, and they grew up together. And just to see the experiences they had, and I think that was the hard thing for Pete. Even though Joe was younger, his decline was faster. And I think for Pete, it was really hard for him to watch his brother decline, knowing he has that same condition. And what road is he on? And so we found that we had to be upfront with them and share certain things about their life, but we didn't want to get too far down the road with discussions and wording. But eventually, Pete one day said to me, we're in the car, and he says, Mom, I know I have a problem with my muscles. How long do I have to live? And so you get those discussions, and you're driving the car and trying not to cry and just explain at a level he would understand. But I think Pete did that without Joe around because he really had that question on his mind. And Pete was the type of person, it's better to tell him up front than him think the worst. He's better to hear it and then to process that. So Pete was able to, you know, understand probably at 12 a little bit more of what his road would look like. And at the time they were diagnosed, that we were told that they would only live till 15 to 20 years old. And so Pete lived till he was 31, and he died in December 2016. And our son Joe, he passed away when he was 20 back in 2007. So it's been, you know, a different journey for my husband and I now, but just some of the things that we've learned and the blessings have been great. And I just wanted to share some survival skills that I learned just to help me keep on the right path and try to function as best as I could. And even though there were times I was down in the dumps and depressed and how could I go on, I knew that I had to do that for our family. And a lot of times I was exhausted because our sons couldn't physically roll at night. So I had to physically get up and roll them. And sometimes it was six or seven times a night I was getting up. And, you know, God gave me the strength to get through that time. And, you know, I could, sometimes I felt like I couldn't think. But, you know, every moment of every day, he gave me what I needed at the moment. And sometimes I could only think about the next 5 minutes, not the next day, because I was just so tired. But, you know, I persevered and met a lot of people that also were affected by disability in their family, and that became the encouragement that I really needed. And so here's just some of the skills that I learned that maybe are something that you've already done or, you know, you could incorporate in your daily journey. But a lot of it was reading the Bible in prayer, because that helped me to stay on the path that God had chosen for me. Community was very important too, whether it was just the community, the church family, even your own family, just the support. And in some ways, people offered to help us. We had to find ways they could help us. Because if you keep saying, no, you're doing great, you really aren't, but you're just like trying to think, how could they help me? And But we had ways that men from our church, they signed up to come over two nights a week to sleep on the floor outside our boys' bedrooms. And whoever called, they would go in and physically roll them. So we had two nights a week that we could sleep through the night. And then we had friends that would come over and cook at our house. I would buy the groceries, and they would cook, and our sons loved to watch them. And then from that, that just became a ministry that went on for 3 years, because our son Joe was in hospice for about 3 years. And if it wasn't for my friends cooking, I don't think we probably would eat very well. But just it's a practical way that they could do it. And sometimes people can think of those practical ways, but sometimes if you give them a purpose or something they can do for you, it's just amazing what takes on. And I like the verse from 2 Corinthians 1, 4 through 5. God comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. For the more we suffer for Christ, the more God will shower us with his comfort through Christ. And in 2000, we went to our first Johnny and Friends family retreat. And at the time, our sons had been going to a muscular dystrophy camp. But they didn't feel like it was something they wanted to do anymore. So my husband had heard on the radio about a Johnny and Friends family retreat. And everyone that goes to the retreat has a family member with some kind of disability. And what's neat there is everyone with a disability gets assigned a buddy, which is a short-term missionary or volunteer. And they just become their friend for the week. And they hang out with your child or your adult person with a disability. And what they do, they just do activities with them. So you can either have some time just to be husband and wife. There's a mom support group, a dad's group. There's a couples group. And you also have, there's a counselor that's available that you can talk to anytime that you'd like. And just the atmosphere there, it didn't matter what the disability was. Everybody fit in. And as our son Pete used to say, this is where I feel the most normal. Because it wasn't like looked at on the guy in the wheelchair. I'm just Pete. And I think in the world, sometimes that's hard because people do look at people in wheelchairs, especially in our son's case, and they judge them. And I remember the first time Pete opened his mouth, and people almost fell out of their chairs because they didn't think he talked because he was in a wheelchair. So I think a lot of it is you got stared at a lot, and that was really painful. But then our sons, it didn't bother them. They just were going to be what they want, and, you know. And I think what was great is our kids were in the regular school system. Those children ask wonderful questions. And I think sometimes that's so great because those children are growing up living with it, and they're so much more accepting as they get older. So I think that's one gift of having our children in the school system, too. But at retreat, no matter what, everyone has a blast. And I remember our first retreat, I cried all the way home because I wanted to bring all those people back with me. Because going back to, I called it reality, it was just hard because people tried, but sometimes you had to just figure out, you know, where are my friends? And, you know, but that comes in time. But a lot of it is you have to be willing to get out there too. And sometimes that's not as easy. But I think, you know, I've met many people with the same condition as our sons, but also many people with different. But you all just support each other in a way, and especially through the Johnny and Friends family, as I call it, because, you know, now with anyway, you can communicate quickly, just get ideas from people. And I think that's what's really neat about communication and some of the social aspects that you can do. But, you know, another thing that's really good is journaling or putting your thoughts into poetry. And I know our son Pete, one of the things Joe asked Pete to do was to write a poem about him when he was gone. And Pete did that. And then Joe said, but maybe you should write a book about poetry. And so Pete used poetry as his grief journey. And a lot of his poems are very intense and very deep. But I wanted to just read the one that he wrote for his brother that he read at his brother's funeral. And we had said to Pete, you don't need to read that. He's like, no, no, I need to read it. So this is just a poem that Pete wrote and just a sample of one of his poems. A poem for my brother. You were quite a bro and you let it show. You were always super courageous with a smile that was contagious. All of you Joe loved and he flew like a dove. He now soars like an eagle, not like an ordinary seagull. You will miss and we will blow you a kiss. You were so brave and not death's slave. You were quite a joy ever since you were a little boy. From a special friend you loved to hug. With your Red Sox blanket you were snug. You loved dogs and cats and looked cool in hats. You liked the Pats and rooted for those guys with the Red Sox caps. Now when I see a rainbow, I'll think of God's promise to you. You now have eternal life and no more strife. You are the champ, and we love going to Johnny Camp. You're now in heaven, and it's you we're craving. You were so good, and you sure enjoyed food. You were never in a bad mood. You love meeting babies. Your new life is sweeter than candies. You live life with such grace, and now you've won the race. I know how we miss you so. You were quite a bro. So that was just a sampling. And, you know, for Pete, he did all his, we had a hospice volunteer at the end with Joe, and we were blessed that we could keep her after Joe passed away because that agency also did home care. So what Pete did with the volunteer, he would dictate all his poetry to this volunteer, she would format it, and then we put together just a, right now it's not an official book, but it's a book, a binder with all his poetry that he's written. And there was probably 31 poems that he did. So for Pete, that was just his way, and it's just great to have them as a memory, and someday maybe we will publish them, but right now we're still trying to sort all that out. And our family life verse is 2 Corinthians 4:16-18. Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And I just want to share some gifts and blessings that we received through our sons. The one thing about our journey is we lived in a small community and we loved where we were and we never thought we'd have to move, but we thought we'd build a house that would be fully accessible. Life would be good in the same community. Well, unfortunately, God closed those doors, and we couldn't find a lot that was buildable. So we actually ended up in a small city close to where we were in Nashua. And it ended up being, it was my mom's cousin's house that they always said, this would be a perfect house for you. And down the road, when our house sold and we didn't know where we were going, that house was on the market. And we went and looked at it, and it was amazing what God provided at that home. So we moved in, and we needed to have an overhead lift system installed in our ceiling to get them in and out of bed. And the house was set up pretty well. It was an L-shaped ranch. The bedroom doors weren't wide enough. We ended up pushing a wall back. And this lift system that we had installed, we actually went to see it at someone's home. And the little girl, when she was born, had this installed because they said she would only live till she was maybe one. She lived till she was 11, and she had passed away. And so they donated the whole lift system to our family. And so we were at the time trying to figure out financing, how are we going to do this? And then that gift just came to our home. And so that house, we had to put a ramp in the garage to accommodate their needs. But other than that, we didn't have to do much more than that. But just how the house just was perfect. In that new community, my husband had a business job, and at the church we were attending, they just saw some special gifts in my husband, Tim, and they asked him if he'd like to go on staff at our current church. And so he was able to leave the business world after 21 years, and his company had just come out with an announcement. We're trying to pare down, and we need people to take early retirement, and it's for people that might want to do something different in their life. And just at that time, he had been asked to go on staff at our church. So he was asked, and the next day, our son Joe got very sick and had a lot of issues, spent a week in the hospital. He did come home and did do well. And just because of circumstances with the budgeting and with our current church, my husband was blessed with 6 months off from severance pay and severance insurance, so that we had 4 months between when he left that job and he came on staff at our church. And so Tim started work in August 2004, and at that time, the day after he started, Joe had something else go on, and he ended up being airlifted to Dartmouth, and we were told that he probably wouldn't live much longer, but we brought him home, and he lived 3 1/4 more years. So, you know, God had a plan for him, and at the time, we didn't think we had much time, but, you know, it was a gift, and he kept saying, I want to live till I'm 20, and God provided that. And so I think, you know, what we had expected, it was, you know, so much better than we had planned. And I think, you know, we knew their life would be shorter, and we knew that someday we would have to give them back, and we've done that now, but God has other things for my husband and I. And then, you know, Johnny and friends, it was so much part of our life and our family that after Pete died, we were discerning, is that something we should do? Is that going to be too hard? But it means so much to us, and the experience and the blessing that Johnny and friends has been to us, that my husband applied, and so he's been at that job since July 2017. And so it's definitely a different season for us, but there's so much more God wants to do with us. And so we're just thankful for the opportunity to continue to bless others and encourage others for the road that we've been on. And, you know, another thing was, you know, the greatest gift was to see our sons. They're created in the image of God, and the glory that God received by the lives that they both lived. God does not make mistakes. Each day was a gift. And as Isaiah 40:31 says, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. Their trust in the Lord and the joy that they exhibited touched our lives and warmed our hearts in extraordinary ways, and continues to do so every day. As I close today, I would like to share a devotional that our son Pete prepared for the Advent devotional for our church a short time before Pete went to his eternal home. So this was something that Pete was asked to do, and it just happened to be the topic on joy, and it happened to be the same Bible verse that Johnny and friends had used for their theme for the whole year in 2016. It comes from Nehemiah 8:10. The joy of the Lord is my strength. Now, this is about Christmas, but it's getting close to that, so it would probably pertain. The season of Christmas is so great and meaningful to our faith. We feel so much joy, and it runs much deeper than mere happiness. I have found a lot of joy this year, even though it has been a very difficult year for me. Scripture teaches us that joy is not dependent on our circumstances. Nehemiah 8:10 really shows us the power of joy and how it is our strength by our Lord Jesus. Joy also helps with our hope. This verse happens to be the Johnny and Friends 2016 theme verse, and this organization makes a big difference in bringing joy to families affected by disability. Family retreat was a joyful highlight of my year. At the beginning of this year, I was diagnosed with cancer on top of already living with my primary disease of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. When I got cancer, I wondered what my year would be like and the concerns with this news. There were many difficulties, such as coming to the realization that treatment was not the best option for me. I chose joy in the midst of this decision, and it has given me the strength and courage to face each day, as well as growing my faith in the Lord. This whole year, my quality of life has been so great because I understand joy in a new and more powerful way than I ever had in the past. As your year comes to a close, and as we celebrate joy this time of year, I challenge each and every one of you to choose joy, even when life seems hard, and take courage. The joy of the Lord is our strength, and the joy of the Lord is my strength. And I think for Pete, you know, the cancer was definitely a shock. And as Pete, after he swallowed that a little bit, he realized, you know, I already had a fatal disease, but that put it on such a different level, but he was at peace with it. And choosing not to treat it was really the best, because the doctors had said he'd probably get so sick from chemo and radiation that it would be hard. He'd probably live in the ICU probably for whatever time he had left. So Pete did become jaundiced because it was liver cancer in October, and Pete said, it doesn't matter what I look like, I'm still going out in public. And he did, and he went to church the Sunday before he died, and he was still greeting people, and he had one hard day the day before, and then off he went. Mm-hmm. So, and he was waiting. He had made a gift for my husband and I. It was a Shutterfly book, and the day before he died, he kept saying something about the post office, and he kept talking, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, wouldn't you know, that package came that day, and he said, that's for Christmas. You need to put it under the tree. So he put it under the tree, and that night he went to sleep, and the next morning he had gone off peacefully. Mm-hmm. So, you know, God had a purpose, and for Christmas, only gifts we had were just from Pete. And as Pete said in the book, he said we had a great life. And so that was just a gift, even though it was short, it was great. And just to have a book that Pete really did, but it incorporated his brother in the book. And it was just a way that he blessed us at Christmas time. And I'll show you pictures. So this was Pete. And this was Joe. And I'm always open for questions if anybody has anything, because I'm game for anything. So if anybody wants to share something or has a question or would like to clarification or anything. Because I know I was like, when they said 50 minutes, I'm like, that's a long time to talk.
I have a question, Joe.
Yes.
How do you begin to let someone else take care of your child when you've done it a long time?
That was really hard to let go. You know, when we started with caregivers, they were a lot younger, which I think helped, because I know they're going to lose abilities, but we started when they were young enough that the boys learned to accept it. And, you know, we always had women most of the time, but that didn't bother them. So it was really hard at first. And a lot of times what I do is I always help train the people, because I can sort of tell if they're going to work out or not. Mm-hmm. And if I have any doubts, they probably will not stay on board. So I think for me, it definitely was a challenge, especially as we had a lot of equipment that was critical too, and we had to train on that too. But yeah, it's definitely the first time someone showed up, it's like, oh, can we leave them? Can we go out? And then eventually, once I knew I could trust them, we just had to, so that my husband and I could just have time together. So, or just if I had time, but it's definitely hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. But it's definitely a transition, and it's not always quick and easy. because we've had many caregivers, and sometimes they only last one or two times, and then you're training again. But it's just part of, eventually, usually, you get the right person, and then it's a huge blessing for everybody. And I think it's good for our kids to know other people can do it, too, because I think that was a big concern. On Pete's like, I want mom all the time. But, you know, it's just what they get used to, too. But once they know someone else can do it, I think it's a blessing for that person, too, because they learn so much from our children. Mm-hmm. So I think that's been a really good thing, too.
You have a lovely gift.
Oh, thank you.
To share.
And, you know, it was great because after Pete passed away, he had told the social worker from hospice that he knew his mom and dad loved each other so much they'd be okay. Because he just knew that it was God first, and it was our marriage, and then it was our sons. And they knew they were going to be cared for, but they saw how we loved each other, and Pete was ready to go because he knew we'd be okay. And I think that was just huge for her to share that with us. And there's a lot of other blessings that we hear from different people down the road, but at the time, it's just, you know, it encouraged us to this day. So
how did you help keep your marriage a priority in the midst of all the other things?
Well, we just would make a point of having time, and we had, for a while, a caregiver for 4 hours on Friday night, because sometimes you have a caregiver an hour or two, you really can't do much. We had her for 4 hours, so we would do that, and then once a year, my husband and I would go away for a three-day weekend, and my parents at the time were able to take care of the boys. As they got older, it got a lot more challenging for people to care for them, and especially at the end of Joe's life, people were afraid, because he was very frail, and they were afraid something might happen on their watch, and I'm just like, you know, we're not going to blame you, but they were just, it got harder as their needs changed. But he was a lot more stable and a lot, so he was a lot easier. And a lot of times, Tim's brothers would step up. Their wives never had children, so they didn't do any care. His brothers did it all, and it wasn't often, but when they had to do it all, and that was a gift too, because, you know, I have a sister and she could do it too, but it was nice for his family to have the time. And it was a special time for them. Because, you know, we knew that down the road, that's what they're going to remember, mm-hmm. that special time they had together. So that's another way that we were able to do it. So. And so I know lunch is like 12:20, but if there's no more questions, I mean, people can feel free to stay and talk to me after, or you know, if there's any other questions, but just don't feel you have to sit here till 12:20. But thank you. I appreciate you all coming, and I'm sure there'll be sure.
You know, on meeting others outside, if you like, I, you know, when I was a lot younger, I had a real overwhelming stutter, and in many instances, individuals, when they were speaking with you know, the family as a whole, they would ignore me altogether and speak with my mother as if I didn't exist.
Yeah.
And of course, that used to make you feel really bad. But that went on. And, you know, I'm talking now about 75 years ago, all the way up, you know, to existing times, but over the years I've noticed that, you know, there has always been ignorance out there as to how to meet individuals who have a disability of some sort,
mm-hmm.
whether it's in speech, in which, you know, I understand, because I've observed it, it's embarrassing to a lot of some individuals if they hear anybody stutter. It really mm-hmm. upsets some people, and others it makes them angry, literally. I've seen both. I've seen individuals who just walk away, or they look at you and treat you as if you're an idiot. And when you, I had noticed that when I was a lot younger. There was a young man who lived up the road from where I lived when I was in my early teens, probably. And he had a, I don't know, some sort of a mental disorder, I guess, but he also had a bad stutter. Mm-hmm. And they used to link me with him, just assumed that I had a mental problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, having to work with this, because, you know, you could indicate and say, well, I'm a mental idiot. If you could express yourself, which at that time I had difficulty anyway.
Right.
I often used to get into word blocks and things like this, but I had no way of expressing myself all that well. So yeah, I just wondered how you managed and how much ignorance you ran into over the years.
Well, there was a lot, because people would do the same thing, talk to us, not them, so that's all I asked them.
Right.
You know, we were just... But we tried to teach our sons, too, because they couldn't shake people's hands, so people were to shake their hand. We're like, just tell them to grab your hand. Because otherwise people come up and awkward, and they're trying.
Sure.
So he said to Pete and Joe, you got to make it easier for those people, too, so they're not, like, wondering. But a lot of it, you just have to tell the people, encourage them to talk to the person. But I think people just make assumptions, and it's probably because they don't have any experience, and it's not that they mean harm.
No,
they just don't know. They haven't been educated or experienced.
Absolutely.
And I think it's typical for a lot of people to just avoid, because... instead of, like, asking how they could interact or...
Some are you know, they don't want to get involved because it upsets them in some way.
Right.
Usually. From what I remember, anyway. I mean, you know, in more recent years, there has been much more openness in lots of things, in speech particularly, I guess, but... And in a lot of other areas, you know, years ago they didn't know why people stuttered or anything, and there were all sorts of different ideas, but that altered a lot, hopefully.
And I think a lot of it is, as people go through life, usually at some point in their life they'll have someone they know with a disability or diagnosed with a recent disability, and I think that sometimes is what it takes, because if you don't live it, people don't really know what goes on in our homes and what we really face and how hard it is at times.
Sure.
And you think, you don't want to complain and you don't want to share it all, but sometimes I think people ask how you're doing, you say good, because you don't want to go there. But sometimes I think they really need to know how hard it is, because if they don't, they just think you always have your act together, and not always the case, but, you know, you just... But I think sometimes it's hard to go there, too, because then you know some people... I mean, some things people will say is well-meaning, but unfortunately you might not share with them again because it was so hurtful, their response. But sometimes someone just has to be with you and not say anything. You know, that was our experience a lot.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, you might not know what to do or say, but just be a presence, you know. And sometimes we just need someone to listen to us and not try to fix it, because sometimes there is no fix. And I think we're just... want to always fix everything, and sometimes you just have to process it in your own way. But I think for my parents it was hard, because they're grieving for us and they're grieving for their grandchildren. And I had to remember, you know, they weren't as supportive at times, but you have to remember what they're going through is so much different and in so many more layers. And I think there's so many family dynamics that enter in that you might not expect, but, you know, with God you can face those things too. I just think it's hard sometimes in a family, but I think it can grow the family and bless them in a huge way too.
Sure. So. Yeah, God can use you in spite of what you are.
Well, I just wanted to share, I am one of those grandparents. So I'm listening, and I just don't understand the experiences that everybody's gone through, but I do have a grandson who hasn't been labeled completely, but is in the process of being labeled with a disability. And but I'm finding how lacking I am in understanding how to support my daughter and understand. I mean, I adore my grandchildren, but I don't, in the day-to-day interactions, because we just spent a month there for a family emergency, but the day-to-day interactions are what's, I'm finding difficult to give her the best support because I don't know how to best interact with that grandchild and the siblings who aren't that don't have the disability.
Yeah, and it's always hard because at first you don't have experience, so it's like, how am I going to be the best support? And I think a lot of times, if you just call her and just listen, she might be having a hard day, and a lot of it's just listening. And it's hard because you want to offer advice, you want to offer comfort, and sometimes that might be appropriate, but other times it might be just listening. But it's such a fine line, and just to adjust. And, you know, there's a workshop on, do they call it Glass Children, for the other children too, that helps you to just understand where they're coming from. But I think, you know, a lot of it is, it's hard for you. And I, you know, after, if you want to talk a little more, I can try to get some ideas that might work. But it's just, yeah, it's, because especially you don't have the official diagnosis, but just knowing what it could be, your daughter just processing that, and sometimes her emotions might be a little more shaky, which might reflect more with the mom because you're her support. So, you know, some of that is like, how do you not hold it personal when she's had a bad day or she might snap, or how do you do that without feeling bad? Like, now what do they do? But I think a lot of that is just emotionally, initially, it's hard. And then I think, you know, a lot of times it's like any of us with something hard. But just to always apologize, too, just knowing maybe she was sensitive or whatever. But there's lots of different ways to do it, but it's, especially when you don't live close and see it day to day, you know, then it's, you know, it's harder. Because like with our sons, the grandparents, one set lived further away, and they'd see him every month, and they'd be weaker, and they're like, what's their problem? But that's how they reacted, because they hadn't seen him in a month. Whereas if you're closer, sometimes it's easier, but it doesn't mean it's impossible. You know, there's ways to, but I can share a little bit more later. And I do have a little handout, just a little picture of us, and there's, I don't know how many copies there are, but if you just want to have something for about me, you can help yourself to one of those. But other than that, I think we're good. But I'll be around, and I'll be around for lunch and stuff, so
thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm thinking of you guys.
Is it
pink? Yeah.
Yep. Oh,
okay. I was thinking of
that.
Is it
what? Yeah,
she's on the
No, it's good. I got to run.
Oh,
it's
your brother? Yeah.
How old is he?
No worries. Yeah, like Joan?
Yes.
I don't know if you remember me.
Because I know you look familiar. I'm trying to remember who you are. You're like, look at me, and I'm like,
I know, and I couldn't believe Sim Farming.
Yeah, it's great to see you.
Hearing and hearing about the boys.
Yeah.
They were so special.
Over there, take
well, I'm glad you came over, because there's so many people that I've seen, but I don't know everybody.
And I wanted to speak up and say I had the pleasure of knowing Joe and Pete just a little bit. And
but
what a blessing it was, but I was afraid I'd slobber all over the room.
Yeah. But I mean, it was... For Tim to be on Johnny and Friends now, he's in Thailand right now doing a wheelchair distribution.
Wow.
Yeah. How are you?
Oh, sure.
Good to see you.
How are you?
I'm good. So he's in Thailand. Johnny and Friends has where they collect wheelchairs, and then they refurbish them in prisons, and then they get shipped over. So New England has an affiliation with Thailand now, so he's been there for 1 week, and he has a week to go.
Tim is on staff.
Yeah, I heard him say that.
So,
that's awesome.
So it's, you know, and I just got a full-time job because I really needed to work because I didn't have health insurance coverage. So I'm working now at BAE Systems, Nashua, in the tax department. So I'm liking it. I've been there 2 months now. But, it's been, Pete died December 2016. It gave me a year and a half to process things, and then I was ready. You know, it's just time for me to do something. And
You said Pete was 31?
He was.
And Joe was 20.
Yeah. No, I was sitting.
Oh, you were?
I came in.
So Joe was always frailer, and things just started changing faster. And Pete, the cancer was really a gift because he basically went to sleep and didn't wake up. And his respiratory was really bad. And even if he got a cold, he could have died from a cold.
Yeah.
So his respiratory, otherwise we would have probably watched him gas for a year eventually.
Yeah.
And, the cancer, it was... He was diagnosed January and he died in December. So, it wasn't anything we expected. It was you got to be kidding me. But
we
just processed it,
And the little time we had with them, we just loved those boys.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wish you could have...
I think even when they were young...
That's when...
You or Tim mentioned that he was the one that seemed to be...
Joe,
more effective.
Yeah. And for his heart was functioning at like 15% the last 3 years, and the doctor said he won't live, but he didn't stress. It just shows what stress does to you.
I heard Pete's did a video for his funeral. Is there any chance?
Yeah, I could send it to you. I have to get your email, and I can send it to you.
So I would absolutely love to see that.
Yeah, because he shared the gospel.
That's what I'm sitting next to a young girl does retreats for Johnny and Friends.
Oh, yeah, who is that? Oh,
okay. A young girl right next to me.
Oh, yeah,
and,
Angela.
She said, you've got to watch that video if you ever get a chance to, because
Pete's like me.
And Joe looks like Tim.
Because Pete said, I can't look like you because I'm a guy, so you can still look like me. Smarty pants. And the saddest thing for Pete, that's what was hard. When Joe was gone for 3 years, he was miserable
that was his best buddy.
He was so close. Then Pete did Toastmasters. He started doing that, public speaking.
Really?
And we used to go to schools and speak. We would go to hospice and share our story for the new volunteers in home health and hospice. And Pete had such a big impact. We've shared again since he's gone, but it's not the same.
Oh, my.
And people ask him questions, but... Because he went through it with Joe, he used to say, and someday I might be in hospice, so he was in hospice the last 3 months. But hospice is a wonderful thing. Yeah, there's probably stuff on the end that you don't